What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. As the 2019 Formula One season wraps up and Lewis Hamilton closes in on championship number six, the best way to stream every second of action is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN lets you easily catch every race, set up in under 10 minutes, and enjoy HD streams throttle-free. Here's how it works. If you don't have a U.S. cable subscription, ESPN2 is a great way to tune in. Get ExpressVPN and then connect to a server location in the U.S. Visit YouTube TV or PlayStation View and use the free trial. For those of you in the U.K., catch every race on Sky Sports F1. Just get ExpressVPN, connect to a U.K. server, and visit Sky Sports on Now TV. ExpressVPN works on your computer, phone, router, and consoles like Fire TV, so you can watch all the games from any device. And even when I'm not watching Formula One, ExpressVPN encrypts all your data and keeps it safe from hackers 24/7. Enjoy all the remaining races this season in HD with the world's most trusted VPN, ExpressVPN. Use my special link today to get 3 months free at ExpressVPN.com/smokingtire. That's ExpressVPN.com/smokingtire for 3 months free with a 1 year package. Visit ExpressVPN.com/smokingtire to learn more. And how about Blue Driver, folks? The Blue Driver scan tool is the easiest and most effective way to understand your vehicle. Just plug the Blue Driver sensor into your car or truck, open the Blue Driver app on your phone, and boom! In seconds, you're learning about any issues your vehicle might have. Not only will Blue Driver tell you why your check engine light is on, it can find hidden issues that can normally only be detected by professional mechanics' tools. Best of all, after you discover a problem, Blue Driver will suggest verified fixes for the issue. Then you can fix the problem yourself or head to the garage armed with knowledge. Either way, you're going to save time and money. Blue Driver is powerful enough for a mechanic, but easy enough for anyone to use. That's why it's the best-selling scan tool on Amazon. Order one for yourself or give it as a gift. The holidays are just around the corner, folks, and Blue Driver makes a great gift for the auto enthusiast or DIYer in your life. For a limited time, take advantage of our special Smoking Tire offer. Visit BlueDriver.com/TST. That's BlueDriver.com/TST to get 10% off Blue Driver today. BlueDriver.com/TST. Guys, how about the Thinkware dash cam? It's the U1000, folks. It's now available. It's able to capture clear and crisp videos of your drive. The Thinkware U1000 is the very first two-channel dash cam in the world to boast a native 4K front and 2K rear resolution. In addition to its amazing video quality, the U1000 can also save you money with its speed and red light camera alerts, or make you a safer driver with lane departure and front collision warnings. With the convenient remote live view and parking impact alert cloud features, you can instantly check on your car or be notified of potential hit and runs. The U1000 and Thinkware's full range of dash cams are available online and in-store at Thinkware.com, Best Buy, and Amazon in the U.S. and Canada. But if you go to Thinkware.com and use coupon code SMOKE20, that's SMOKE20, SMOKE20, and redeem that coupon code, you get 20% off any regular price Thinkware dash cam. Thinkware.com, coupon code SMOKE20. Get you 20% off. Lastly, of course, you've seen it during the show when we talk about cars. Zach pulls them up. It's Auto Tempest, folks. Auto Tempest is easy. It saves you time. It saves you money. When you're looking for a car, you got to look all over the internet, right? You got to look at a dozen different sites. You got to re-enter all the information over and over. It's super annoying. It's a waste of time. Auto Tempest searches all the major used car listing sites in the U.S., plus a bunch of smaller ones, and you only have to enter that search criteria one time. It even lets you compare with results from all of Craigslist, not just the area around you, and pretty soon, another place that's a big marketplace that I'm not naming yet, but it's a marketplace. It saves you time, and therefore it saves you money, because if you try to check it for yourself, it's double work city, folks. It's the worst. Look, guys, here's how it is. Auto Tempest takes good care of us here at the Smoking Tire, and we should take good care of them by saving yourself money. That's it. You don't have to spend anything. You're just saving. It's only saving. AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search. All right, folks, on this episode of the podcast, Edmonds Carlos Lago. He is really taking that YouTube channel over there by the horns. He's making a bunch of videos. We're going to talk about C8 Corvette. We're going to talk about GT500. We are going to talk about a bunch of stuff, but boy, do we spend a lot of time in this episode on C8 and GT500. But they're heavy hitter cars, folks, so that's what it's about here on the Smoking Tire Podcast with Edmonds Carlos Lago.
I got banned from Yelp for 6 months once.
How'd you do that?
Remember the magician? Zach, were you there for the magician?
Yeah, yeah, before Fast and Furious.
We went to a restaurant that had a tableside magician.
Awesome.
That was going around.
Like, as part of the restaurant or just
it was as part
surprise.
Of the... Part of the No, it was not advertised.
Okay.
No. Yeah. So we had a tableside magician.
Yeah.
This wasn't a magical restaurant. This was just a restaurant in a strip mall.
A Chevy's or something.
Yeah. No.
That just had
just a regular, like a
really
Greek restaurant or
boring
something.
Boring decoration.
Is it kind of like, you know, a Mexican restaurant, they have the mariachi band come up?
Or? Yeah, but worse, because it was straight up like strip mall, tile floor,
so, okay.
Like
okay.
Bought the furniture secondhand from a Burger King that went under kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like they had a magician,
tableside magicians.
Anyway, the tableside magician, we clearly expressed that we did not wish to, and came over. And I left a Yelp review in which I described the appearance of the tableside magician as somewhat pedo-like.
So.
Like so, he had a ponytail that was, and like, it was really like, pedo-like. It was pedo-like.
Tell me more about this experience with you clearly indicating you did not want a magician at your table. Magician still comes over. Because at that point...
There were other tables that had, like, families and kids. It made
a
little more sense.
At this point. If you say, like, we don't want any.
Yeah.
And they're still there.
I don't recall that exactly the interaction
that
was had.
You're now the hero, right?
Like, I don't want to say the magic was forced on us. I want to say that more, he just didn't get the social cue.
Like, you're trapped.
Yeah, you're like, thank you. Thank you.
And anyway, using the term pedo-like to describe his appearance on Yelp led to a ban. Which, you know, okay. Fair. I think that's actually fair. Ask me if I've ever been to that restaurant again. Nope. So it was okay. By the way, food, not that great either.
I wonder if the magician was hired by the restaurant.
It seemed like it was a promotional thing. Like
it's the
come
guy's
on
cousin
Wednesday.
Or something, you know? He's just doing his best.
Yep. And with that, it's the Smoking Tire Podcast. Hi folks.
Everybody.
Carlos Lago is
How's
in
it going?
The studio from the Edmonds. And in total Edmonds fashion, you rolled up in a Camry.
I rolled up in our long-term Toyota Camry. It's got 35,000 miles on it now.
And let me guess, it works.
It works great, as any new car should with 35,000 miles on it. But yeah, I've been in that for 2 weeks.
Question.
Hey, angle that mic a little more pointed towards your face. Down.
Oh, downward.
Yeah, sorry.
I think Camisa wrote the steering feel in the Camry
excellent.
Is better than any non-MBMW right now. Is that true?
Well, I mean... Kind of a low bar, right?
I agree.
It's a pretty low bar.
It is.
Yeah.
But is that true?
You know, I'd say the Camry, I don't know. I have to drive the two back to back. But, you know, the modern Camry, this new generation of Camry actually does a lot of things well from a driving perspective.
Yeah.
Like the engine really wants to rev and it feels good when you do it.
Has anyone tried to fit the Evora supercharger on it yet?
I'm sure it might work, right?
I think it kind of does, but I think you'd have to find a hood or cut a hole in the hood or something.
And the Camry, like, doesn't do anything wrong, per se.
Yeah.
Like, I think the transmission's a little clunky more than
It's like kind of an antiquated auto, right,
this point? And you get some harsh shifts every now and again. Nothing, again, terrible, but it's like, this probably shouldn't be the case for this kind of car.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why as a brand, we like the Accord more, but, like, I wouldn't fault anybody for getting a Camry. I think the Camry looks better.
When I see them on the road now, I'm kind of like, that looks kind of nice.
Yeah. The only thing that still doesn't look right is that weird plastic vent underneath the taillights.
Oh, yeah.
These little, like, I don't even know what you call them, but they're just these weird little details.
It's like I guess it's like a contrast detail. It's supposed to look like an extractor type vent,
yes.
But it definitely isn't one.
It's like one of those vestigial things from the concept that should have disappeared.
Yeah, yeah. What colors does that hide it? Like, if you get in black, you can't
black
see it.
Black or gray?
Right?
Yeah.
I've seen a couple like the people are like murdering them out.
Yeah.
The black wheels and the tint, and it's not bad.
It's not a bad look.
You
know, and that I think with the V6 it has almost like 300 horsepower too, so it can scoot with the right setup.
I've had a couple of Mazubers.
Yeah.
They're all right.
They're fine. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a totally fine car, you know.
Mm-hmm. I saw the interior photo on one of them. They had like all red, looked mm-hmm. really nice.
Yeah.
Like it looked pretty upscale.
Oh, do they do the Superman thing like Lexus does with the blue outside and the red inside?
I think it was just a gray car, but
gray with
nice.
Red works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll say our car does this really cool thing with Bluetooth audio. It just doesn't work no matter what. And in fact, when I connect my
phone. Your Bluetooth audio is just fucked?
So the phone, fine, no problem.
Uh-huh.
But music, I connect my phone every 5 minutes, maybe a minute, it gets Bluetooth audio device connected, Bluetooth audio device disconnected. So actually, I drove to Vegas last week for the GT500 launch.
Ooh.
And that was real fun without satellite or any streaming audio.
That sucks.
There are some interesting FM and
Japan's
AM
pretty new to electronics, to be fair, so integrating these systems is difficult.
They've got some time to catch up.
I mean, is that considered broken, or was that...
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right.
So it's not
a big deal.
So it's not perfect.
And I think there's a couple people at the office who are on Android that have had the same problem, too.
Bummer.
So Toyota stuff is getting better in that regard. Like, they're bringing Apple CarPlay, they're bringing Android Auto, but, right, it's some of the stuff in the transitional stage.
The 992's got
good.
Bluetooth CarPlay, which I am about.
And no Android Auto.
And now they can... now you can do, like, multiple things at once.
Yeah.
So, like... I can fucking fast forward my podcast a little bit without like having the screen change from my Waze.
That's nice.
Which is real nice.
That's nice. So it's nice about the updated Android Auto stuff too, is you can do that while you have the Waze up.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that's
okay,
what I mean. Yeah, you can do other things with your phone.
Oh, no, so I mean you can do this stuff on the screen without looking at your phone on Android Auto.
Oh, and where does it put the Waze screen? It makes it smaller?
Yeah, well, you have, like, if you divide the screen, not by quarters, but even more than that, like, the top major section is the map, and then you have, like, fast forward, play, and rewind.
Oh, the home screen on CarPlay will do that.
Yeah, okay,
I don't know if they'll do it with Waze, though. They may only do it with the Apple Maps.
Yeah.
Typically, I go full screen Waze, and then I have a mount for my phone,
mm-hmm.
and so I leave the music controls on the phone screen, and then the Waze on the there, because I just did, like, Boxer Spider, 1,250 miles. Ugh, the best.
That's not bad.
1,250 miles in 36 hours.
That's not bad.
I was mobbing.
Where'd you drive from?
L.A. to Santa Rosa and back.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Flavortown, USA, brother.
Good times.
Yeah.
How's that car? I haven't driven that yet.
The best.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it's the best, but obviously not the best because of the Cayman complex, Boxster or Cayman will ever be better than a 911. So it would be the best if it had the GT3 engine.
Sure. Yeah.
As is, it's the second best.
Like most things would be best.
But it has, but
pizza would be the best.
But it has a 4 liter. It's just not the 4 liter.
Yeah,
like, isn't it weird that Porsche makes 2 4 liters? Doesn't that seem harder than making more other 4 liters?
Right.
It seems
but
harder.
But it's easier than getting their upscale market back when you give the lower car the good engine.
The conspiracy theorist in me makes me want to say, like, oh, they put the 4 liter name on there just to confuse people. I know that's not true at all. That's not something they would do. But I wonder how many people are buying it.
No, but that's a very
thinking,
pleasant side effect.
Yeah, how many people are thinking, oh, yeah, it's got the 4 liter.
Yeah.
It's got the 4 liter.
So for those who have no idea what we're talking about, the new Boxster Spider is the Cayman is the same now as the Cayman GT4. Boxster Spider in the past was a little different from Cayman GT4. Now it's a Preuninger program, and so Cayman GT4 and Boxster Spider are the same car except for the roof.
Yeah.
Okay, same suspension, same engine, same wheels, brakes, bodywork, all that shit's the same except for the roof. And because the Cayman is a Boxster with a roof and not the other way around, they weigh the same. So that car is 3120. It's the lightest car they make.
That's fantastic.
So the engine is a 4 liter, but what they do is they take the Carrera 3 liter, they bore it, stroke it, and take the turbos off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it has new heads. It's got a lot of new stuff. It's a new engine, and instead of revving to 9 like the GT3, it revs to 8. And this car is a Euro car, so it's got that funky, stupid filter on it. The exhaust filter.
Yeah, yeah.
So this one sounded kind of weird, and apparently the US cars are going to sound better
than
this.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But it still sounds pretty nice.
How's the gearing on that?
Same.
This is the tall, crazy tall.
It's the tall thing. Yeah. And so I didn't really, like, when I drove it from Venice to Santa Rosa and back,
mm-hmm.
The tall gearing didn't bother me so much. It's actually pretty decently geared for like road tripping. But then I went on the canyons and started mobbing. Dude, you can drive upper Big Tahunga in Zach, did you edit the video yet?
No.
So when you do the video, I pull out of the fucking start. Yeah. First gear, second gear, third gear, stays there.
Never touch it.
It's in third gear for the entire remainder of the video. And I make a point of it. Like, imagine upper Big Tahunga in third gear only and just not needing to upshift ever.
Wow, because it's a road with some legs.
Third gear, by the way, maxes out at 113 miles an hour.
Why?
That's so stupid.
Is it a 7-speed or a 6-speed?
It's a 6.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I guess you have some justification.
But third gear
there,
maxes out at 113.
Is
but
top speed
sixth,
what, in fourth?
At sixth at 80 is like 3,500.
Yeah.
Is it all an MPG play? Because there's so many cars like this today that just the gearing is so ridiculous.
It's got to be not knowing what the fuel economy test standards are. I'm sure we could look them up. It's got to be some advantage there. But
yeah. Goes to 73 and third goes to 113. Fourth goes to like 130.
My problem with that philosophically is like you might as well just have an automatic. At that point,
I mean,
you're not shifting.
Yeah.
You know, like what I loved about
it. And it's a shame because the shifter and the pedals are so good. Like, it's fun to use them and it's not hard. Like, it's great. When a company does it well, you know, it's great.
That's what I loved about the Mustang 3 or 4 years ago. You get a really tight ratio of gearbox in that thing.
And the 2015
one. You would shift that a lot. And that's like, great. This is why I have a manual because shifting's fun.
Yeah.
This is why I do this experience.
Yeah.
So when you don't need to shift and the engine doesn't require it, and especially when you have an engine that probably sounds amazing too, it's like kind of a missed opportunity, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, you can shift it more,
sure,
but if you're going to be going as fast as the car will go, you're not going to be doing a lot of shifting.
Are you falling out of power if you shift too much because you don't want to redline everything because you don't want to go that fast? Yeah. Then you're out of power band.
Yeah, right? Because I mean, if you're on it, that power band is really 4 to 8. Maybe even 5 to 8. And so if you want to, you know, there's not a lot of places you can be going that fast.
Yeah. I still have to drive it. I still need to drive it.
No, you know what, though?
I'm sure it's sweet.
It's still awesome.
Yeah.
You know, for 105 grand, which is the price of that car.
Yeah.
I think that's the best Porsche you can buy for that money.
105's a lot.
It's a lot, but you're just getting into Carreras at that point.
I know. That's the scary truth, isn't it?
And you're not getting anywhere near another NA engine for that much money in a Porsche anymore.
Yep. And it looks very interesting.
It looks awesome.
And good. It looks good and it's unique. Look good.
And honestly, you give up zero practicality.
Yeah.
I drove it so far. The front trunk is huge. The back trunk is huge. The seats are the carbons, but they're comfy. Like they're made of, you know, the shape of them is the correct shape. Mm-hmm. So you could sit in it for 7 hours and it's fine. And the top up is actually like I was driving it deep in the triple digits and like listening to a podcast at a normal volume.
That's one of those unspoken traits that a lot of sports cars have gained recently. You know, like, you know, power's gone up, fuel economy's gone up, but like comfort has also increased at the same level as performance, right? Like modern sports cars these days are really comfortable cars.
Yeah.
You know,
especially like 720 or something like that.
Right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, you could totally drive it every day.
Yeah.
And when you hop in a car that isn't that comfortable, a sports car, and it's even if it's fast, you're like, wait, why is this so uncomfortable? Why does the ride suck? Why are the seats bad? You know, this doesn't have to be this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just in the past 2 weeks have been in C8 and GT500.
Oh yeah. Cool. Well, tell us about GT500.
It's fantastic.
Everyone says it's crazy.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really, really good. My story that I kept telling everybody to the point where they told me to stop was I remember GT500 reveal in, it would have been 2011.
Yeah. When they went to the aluminum engine.
Can you not tell the story?
Okay. Thanks. Moving on.
Moving on.
So anyway.
How's the Camry?
The Camry's pretty rad, man. On the way back. So we did the drive event at VIR. My first time at VIR ever. And here's this, you know, big, massively powerful GT500. They expressly recommend that we do not touch the curbing with a GT500.
Yeah, yeah. Solid axle.
Yes, right. We did this launch at Las Vegas Motor Speedway with a new GT500. And they're like, hit the curbing.
Yeah.
Kill the curbing. They didn't, I don't think they realized that was, you know, a change, but I certainly noticed it. And that thing just soaks up everything. It's really, really good.
Well, the GT is probably, I mean, all Mustangs now are kind of like the sports car to get if you live on shit tarmac.
Right.
It actually is for a front engine car. Oh, that color Vette you drove is a good color.
Yeah.
For a front engine car, the Mustang is probably the best ride of a front engine car, I think,
I'd say now. But for a front engine, you know, rear drive sports car in that range, it's Mustang and Camaro are as good as they've ever been.
I guess the Miata also has a good ride, but that's sort of a different thing.
And then the updated one is just fantastic, too.
Oh, the new motor?
Isn't the new motor great? It's so good.
I got in that. I was sort of like, I sort of blew it off at Road and Track P, Cody.
Yeah.
And then it was there, and they were like, you didn't drive the new motor yet? And I was like, and Camisa was like, no, you have to.
You got
to
drive it.
And I went out on the track in it, and fuck me, was it a difference.
Yeah, that car rocks. And it's funny what, I think like the red line went up, what, 1,000 RPM?
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's like, 1,000 RPM, and then you drive it and you're like, oh no,
no, this it is makes it. A this massive it. Difference. Yeah, and it's, I, you know what, I really want to drive is the MX5 Cup version of that, because the MX5 Cup version of the old one was incredible,
because
it was so sharp and amazing. But the new one, oh boy, wait. So GT500, so it's 700,
760 on 93 octane. What it does on 91,
what'll it do on 91?
I don't know, less.
Yeah, probably 20 or 30 less.
Yeah, I tough to say, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah, the car rocks. It's really expensive.
It's 100 G's, right?
I mean, if you put everything on it, but even the base car is 73, 75-ish around there.
That's a lot.
You get 760 horsepower.
Yeah.
You know, you get a lot of power. You get a lot of capability, but the track pack, the carbon fiber track pack's $18,500.
It's the wheels, though, right?
It's the wheels. It's a couple other wheels, elements, wing. Too. Oh, I don't know off the top of my head. Oh, I thought I said wheels, weight.
No,
yeah,
wheels wing, and wing, yeah.
Aero, adjustable suspension. It rides lower. It's a pretty comprehensive package.
Those wheels are expensive, but fuck, they're kind of worth
they're
it,
They're carbon
though.
Fiber wheels.
I know, you can't really, you can't do those things to the like, reducing that unsprung weight is such a drastic change.
Yes.
There's almost no other way to do it.
It's nuts. Car Driver did an article on the wheels, and they're, you know, similar construction to what's on higher tier Ferrari stuff.
I mean, Carbon Revolution still making them?
Yeah.
Why isn't Ford just buying Carbon Revolution at this point?
If I'm Carbon Revolution, I want to sell more wheels to more automakers. I don't want to be bought by an automaker.
But,
is
anyone else buying their wheels?
Yes. Ferrari is, for sure.
For LaFerrari?
I think there's... I should know better, but I've kind of been out of the supercar world for a while.
Oh, no, Pista's got it,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, Pista's got them, and I think their upcoming, you know, uber, hyper, super, mega car is going to use them.
F90 or whatever it is.
You know, we got to be seeing these things on...
C8's got to have them at some point, right?
There's...
Corvette?
Eventually, like ZR1.
Maybe,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, years ago, I talked to the main guy at Carbon Revolution. I forget his name, but he was implying that, hey, there's a lot of high-performance SUVs coming that really do well with...
Oh, with reduced... because they want to run like 24s, bro.
There's also a lot of high-performance EVs that benefit from low unsprung mass. Yeah, and so this stuff's all in the pipeline.
Carbon fiber wheels for everybody, huh?
Yeah. Hey, you know, I support them. They look cool.
I support carbon fiber wheels.
I support carbon fiber wheels.
I was very lucky that a couple years ago, I got the chance to do a thing with Carbon Revolution at Willow, where they brought out a GT3, and I ran 5 laps in a stock, and then they put it up on jack stands and put Carbon Revolution wheels on it, and it was fucking shocking, the difference in how the car drove.
It's a significant weight.
It was everything about it was so much better. I mean, the turn-in was sharper, and the brakes were better, acceleration was better, like, everything was better. It was crazy how much different it was.
It's really, and it's crazy to think they're on a Mustang. Yeah, even a high-performance GT500.
Well, they were on GT350R.
Right, and they're still cool there. But yeah, this car altogether is, I mean, the dual clutch, right?
I guess they figured it out because, see, the GT350R cost less over the regular 350 than the cost of those wheels. That's why they limited the R, because they lost money on the wheels.
Yeah,
and so they figured out, they go, look, we got to keep the wheels, but we're not losing money on this bullshit anymore. Yeah. So now the cost of that package costs the wheels plus whatever, and they threw in some other stuff.
That's
just
thinking.
Business and life, huh?
Yeah, the dual clutch is real good. It's a trim
gearbox.
Now, is it
the same? It's not the same one in the C8.
No, it's the C8's an 8-speed. The Mustang's a 7-speed.
Oh, it's a completely different gearbox?
Also, think about where it sits in the car.
Yeah, but Ferrari has a transaxle that they use in the back of the California with a torque tube, and then in the middle of the...
Oh, really? They reuse it that way? Okay.
Yeah. So it is possible to, like, mount things in different ways. Yeah.
My understanding is the Corvette one was so specific to that application, they had actually trouble finding a supplier who would do it.
I believe that.
Yeah,
yeah, I believe that.
Requirements, yeah.
Yeah.
And so Tremec does both, I believe.
They do.
And,
like, Tremec is
the is like the dark horse dual clutch supplier right now because both of those transmissions kick butt.
Well, it was about time because they had to dive into the market because both the American companies were demanding that they need it.
And they're doing a fantastic job.
Yeah, so...
And ZF was walking by going, you guys need anything? You good?
Right.
Okay, we're here. You know, just give us a call.
So the Mustang you drove was a production version of the car?
I believe so. I mean, it's the press event and there was a lot of them there, okay. So I would imagine so.
And did you drive it on the street also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Drove a track version on the street.
Okay.
So, yeah, I tried to do that the worst way possible by getting the most aggressive car on public roads, and it was totally
fine. Yeah, but in Vegas.
It's Vegas.
Vegas
is
fucking is easy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Wait, so here, what VIN Corvette were you driving?
I drove one of the pre-production ones that's been going around.
So how did the gearbox feel in that
Great.
One?
Okay. It was fine, yeah.
Did they tell you it was the newest software?
We didn't talk specifics on software about that.
It had handlers, right?
Yes.
Blue with tan?
Yeah.
Is the interior in that? Show me the interior.
The interior's not in that. I could try to dig up a
photo
of it.
What an interesting color combo.
It looks interesting. I would not recommend it because the glare from the tan on the dash just goes... That windshield is so aggressively raked. It's kind of like, whoa, okay.
Now that you mentioned it, had some reflections on dash issues as well. Yeah. But, okay, so the car I drove was VIN number 19.
Okay.
It was sort of the orangey red with the black.
Yeah.
Z51 car. And the gearbox... was good on the track.
Okay.
Full throttle upshifts, full brake downshifts, but around the parking lots and on the street, that one I had. Around the parking lots and the street, it was a little clunky
in its
like mid throttle or mid brake. Like mid brake, there'd be kind of a lurch forward. And mid-throttle, it would almost behave a little slushy where it would go...
Okay.
Well, it also did the thing where, like, I was accelerating it at, like, 3/4 throttle, not super aggressive, but, like, 7/10. And when it shifted, it was... And you pointed out really well, it was like the engine RPM doesn't drop quick enough because of the programming where the next gear slots in right at the right RPM. It would kind of, like, lunge.
Okay. So on the downshifts...
Sorry, downshifting.
Yeah, so on the downshifts, like, what we noticed, because we had a McLaren LT as well, so... When you downshift in a McLaren LT, the engine zings up and then the clutches close right as it begins to come down. So you're using that inertia of the engine braking and it gives you a little brake jerk.
Yeah.
This one, in order to, I think, time the downshift faster, it catches it on the upswing.
Interesting.
Giving you the littlest jerk forward as it engages, where if it actually did it slightly slower, it would catch it on the down like the McLaren does.
So I didn't experience any of that.
So they told us that they had multiple different revised tunes since. So if you didn't experience it, that's good.
I had two complaints about the car. Rear 3/4 visibility.
Is not so great.
There's none.
Yeah. Did you like the camera rear view mirror?
No.
I don't know if we were talking about it. So the C8 has a camera rear view mirror, and there's different levels of zoom. There's three different levels of zoom on it, or you could turn it off and just have a regular mirror, which is horrible. The regular mirror
is horrible. Small. It's small.
Really small, and you can't see anything.
Yeah, because that rear glass aperture is pretty tiny.
It's really little.
Yeah.
It makes me envious of, like, Countach rear view mirror.
Someone figured out you could turn the brightness down on the rear view mirror camera, though, because we were driving it and everyone's like, it's too bright.
Oh,
and then
really?
Someone on the radio was like, I found the button.
Yeah, there's a control for it.
Yeah.
And you could control the zoom of it and the brightness.
I was impressed with the clarity, and I know a lot of cars are going that way. A lot of race cars use it. So I was impressed with that, but I do wonder. I didn't drive it at night. Yeah. I'm not sure how it would be then. And then if it gets dirty, like, you know, radar cruise doesn't work if you get the sensor covered in mud and rain and stuff, so I don't know if that would impact it
problem may be more personal, because I get really motion sick really quickly.
Like, if you do VR, are you done? So
it's boats, no go. If I'm sitting seat in a car and it's twisty, I'm like, I can't. So when I have that mirror on, my depth perception and awareness of just like, whoa, instant. Yeah. Like, instant nausea. So maybe just me.
If you were faster, you wouldn't look in the rearview mirror so much.
True. Even when that mirror was in, like, Cadillac products, I was like, let's get this thing off. But the first thing I did when I drove it was try to back into a parking lot to do that test, because that's going to be very important to these buyers, you know? And it was fine.
Yeah, it's okay.
Right. Yeah, I was, you know, get the camera set up, and it was...
It's not the worst.
It's not just the worst.
And actually, when I first got in the vet, I was like, this fucking camera, oh no.
Yeah, yeah.
And after a couple of hours, I did get more used to it once I learned what the scale was of it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you are actually backing up, the backup camera on the main screen is helpful as well, you know. But it's weird to get used to. It's definitely different, and I'm not sure. What I think is weird about it is they had to make the mirror also work as a mirror.
Right. Yeah.
So that really limits the size. Like, you think with a camera, well, now I could make the screen any size and shape I want. It doesn't have to be the size of a traditional rearview mirror. It doesn't have to be in the place of a traditional rearview mirror. I could put it anywhere.
Yeah.
But, like, because you have to be able to hit a button and make it an actual mirror, you are totally restricted to it. By that.
Yeah.
Which I found very funny and interesting. Did you ride right seated in it at all?
Yes.
Did you find the wall weird?
It is weird, and as somebody who drives all the time, even with my wife, I'm like, not my problem. But you know, for somebody who's in the right seat and wants to interact with a stereo, you got voice controls, go for it, right?
Well, you know, I just drove the new R8 too, and the passenger can't do anything in that either. I think they're kind of going that way.
Ferrari's smart to offer a little HVAC controller or display.
Like that.
I mean, that's a $400,000 car at that point.
No, but that option could trickle down. Like, when I was just driving R8, I was with Collins from Jalopnik, and he was saying how he really likes that they now have these fully driver immersive cockpits where you can do everything on the LCD screen. And I'm like, I like it too, but I'd really liked it when the passenger could take control of basic, you know, HVAC volume and track, you know, thing. And you could do it in the 812. The Ferrari 812 Superfast had the little mini touchscreen, which was very nice.
I like that a lot. But, you know, to me, it's like it's a preference. Could it be better? Yeah, but not.
I think Taken, you can do it too. Yeah, doesn't Taken have the full passenger display?
Yeah, that thing has like four or five displays.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
November 13th, I'm driving it. Yeah. Are you going to? Same day?
I will not be at that one.
I'm
excited. But we'll have a representative there.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
We're looking forward to that. The other thing I wanted to say, did the car that you have, the other car, the C8 that you drove, did it have a lot of like DI noise?
Direct injection noise?
Yeah.
No, we did find the fake noise.
It's
got fake noise.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
Which Kamisa found because he's the most, like, he's like the car.
Kamisa's
fucking,
the most Kamisa.
He's the car whisperer. Like, we need to make Kamisa-ing like a verb.
Yeah.
When you basically like disassemble a press car on the side of it. He fucking like disassembled the Supra.
This is great.
I went to the bathroom and I came back and there's like half the Supra's bodywork is on the floor and him and Sam Smith are just like yelling at each other.
I'm gonna find the toilet part number.
I can just hear. I'm coming out of the bathroom and I hear 24, 25, and they're just counting BMW badges. Okay. There's body paddles like all over the place. It was so fucking crazy.
That's so funny. Well, like the issue. Again, it's an issue for me personally was that thing in idle, stereo off, quiet environment has quite a bit of that that direct injection noise. That sort of
the sewing machine noise?
Yeah, and then at like part throttle, like when you're merging on a freeway at a normal human pace, that got pretty loud for me. So it may be one of those things like your transmission issue that it was just the car that I drove.
It could also be something that I didn't really notice because we didn't do any like around town driving.
Okay.
We really were on the track and I had a fucking helmet on and was beating the piss out of it. And then we were up kind of doing canyon driving.
Yeah. Okay.
So did you enjoy it dynamically?
I really like that car dynamically.
How good is the ride?
The ride's amazing. You know, and like the funny thing is, you know, we were doing some back-to-back driving with other sports cars and the steering doesn't have in comfort mode and all that setup. It doesn't have that like immediate 911 on, right?
911
like,
steering is about right, isn't it?
Right.
So is Boxer Spider. Boxer Spider is the same.
Exactly.
It's amazing.
But thinking about, okay, if I'm commuting to work in the middle of this country and I just want to one-handed on the freeway at 80 miles an hour, that Corvette makes a really compelling case.
I didn't like the sport mode steering. I thought it had too much weight on it. I drove it in like the middle one, and I preferred that.
Yeah,
but that was the case with the Camaro as well. I thought like
I don't like any of those. And I've got the Tesla outside right now. The heavy steering is stupid in that
too. It's way too heavy.
Yeah. I don't need that artificial heaviness. Like, but the steering was really. I thought it was really sharp. It was slightly video gamey, but It's pretty good. I don't know about the square wheel yet.
Aesthetically, yeah, I know people have complaints. I love the fact that it gives you a really clear view of the gauge cluster.
I like that,
and that's
too.
A problem with the 911.
I think, you know, that's like, it's, for so me, it's so charmingly fucking, like, the 911, the idea that the Germans would do a throwback gauge cluster.
Yes, that's gorgeous.
That's gorgeous. Gorgeous. And that the steering wheel blocked back in the day, and that it continues to fucking block.
It's like, it's a gorgeous gauge cluster, and I put the wheel at the bottom of the travel generally, the top rim is just, boom, it's gone.
All four of the side gauges are fully blocked.
And, you know, here's the thing. With the tack, so long as you can see red line, who cares, right? Like, that's the most important part. But, you know, from just a pure visual standpoint, like, why can't I see the gauges?
You
know,
but isn't that an issue of the gauge cluster itself being too wide, not the shape of the steering wheel? Like, if you had a square wheel, unless it was a rectangle, like, it was huge.
Well, that's why the Corvette, you know, wheel,
the Corvette
opens
it really
up at the
surrounds,
top.
It really does surround the screen.
Right, I think,
in the 911,
I think the gauges are smaller.
It cuts right through the middle of it's it, like, in almost any position.
What are you doing, guys?
Well, in my old 911, it's the same.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same. I got in the car and I was like, oh, this is familiar. Yeah. I have to tilt my head to the right to see the fuel gauge.
Sometimes tradition is bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes it can be charming, but it can also be,
because,
like,
the gauges are the same width, but they used to have that giant yacht steering wheel.
Yes.
Now they've got this little sport GT wheel. It's even smaller. But, like, I was just, I'm driving a Tesla Model 3 right now. An actual Tesla press car exists.
Yeah.
While people were complaining about the lack of a gauge pod originally, I learned very quickly that not having a traditional gauge pod means you can put the steering wheel anywhere it's comfortable.
That's totally true. Yeah.
Because I've got big ass legs, right? And then little T-Rex arms. So normally when I drop the steering wheel real low for my little T-Rex arms, it blocks the gauges.
Yep.
Now I put it where the fuck I want. Yeah. Nothing blocked. It's actually brilliant.
We've got about 23,000 miles on our Model 3 at the office now.
Oh, does it work?
It works great.
Good?
Yeah, it works great. I mean, yeah, I think we had all the bugs were ironed out. I mean, it was a first-year production car, right? And there were quite a few recalls on it. I think we had the screen replaced twice.
Oh, shit, really?
But,
twice?
Yeah. But now it's great.
This one I have seems to be of a higher quality than the early one I got.
Yes.
A year ago, whatever it was.
Yeah, they're getting better at making cars.
And this one's the dual motor performance, so it's the fast one, supposedly.
I think it hauls, doesn't it?
I've only driven it from my house to here, but yes.
Yes.
Actually, they pointed out, I looked at the map, I'll give them credit, there's quite a lot more superchargers in LA than the last time I drove a Tesla, including they put one in Malibu up next to Bill's, thank fucking God, and they put one in Glendale at the base of Angeles Crest, so you can actually go mob a Tesla in the canyons now and not worry about if you're going to get home. Like, thank God. Now we can go have some fun.
The real secret to Tesla isn't autopilot, isn't any of that stuff. It's the supercharger network.
Yeah.
I mean, you can legitimately drive that car across the country.
Yeah, you can use it as a car.
And when you're stopping and you're charging it, you can watch Netflix.
Yeah, right? they said, like, they were gonna send the Netflix update to my house tonight the car.
It's really cool that some of the stuff some of the stuff in those cars is really neat.
And the UI shits on everyone else's UI.
Have you found a whoopee cushion yet?
No, but really,
there's a whoopee cushion in the car.
Oh my god, my fucking wife.
I mean, I'd take people for joys in that car, and, you know, not the acceleration, not the autopilot stuff, not the summon. The whoopee cushion gets the most laughs.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a fucking meme car. Of course, it's got stupid shit in it. It's a meme car.
It's really,
Elon Musk is a walking meme, and his car is a meme car. That's the world we're in right now.
Hey, you know what? And you can spend $50,000 on it.
I like the car.
Me too.
I'm not gonna lie. I like the car. It's fucking cool.
You know, I look at a lot of modern compact luxury sedans.
Yeah.
And the Tesla is the new, like, de facto standard of that group.
Yeah, no one else makes a car that size right now that I actually want either.
Yeah.
Everything that I think is desirable to me right now is either smaller or substantially larger than that.
Yeah. And even, which, you know, some of my favorite luxury sedans in around that size are the A-Class and the C-Class Mercedes, right?
Yeah.
Really C-class. Nice cars.
Yeah, it's good.
They're both have a lot of strengths going for them. But when you option one up, I'm like, yeah, same money. I'd probably just lease a Model 3.
Yeah.
You know, all things being equal, right? Because it is more engaging to drive.
It's certainly, like, I do like anything that, like, You and I have done so much driving that anything that can alter that driving experience is good.
Yes.
For me, sometimes that means driving on the right-hand side of the car.
Yeah.
Sometimes that means driving a car that requires you to do some really weird shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I just fucking drove my Countach to the Audi R8 press launch for a full dick measuring reasons and almost no other reason.
Did you win?
Yes, yeah. I won. It seemed like a really good reason at the time. I had such a nice drive. Yeah. It was so fucking good. Yeah. On the way home was rough, but the way up was great. Yeah. See a souvenir I picked up? I picked up the plastic.
I saw that.
That's going to be $1,000. No, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But fuck, where was I? Weird car. Yeah. But the Model 3, one pedal driving is like a new thing.
You know, and that I'd argue that car might have the best steering of that group. When you turn off the sports steering and just leave it in its normal regular mode.
Pretty good.
Yeah. You drive that back-to-back with the new 3 Series, and it makes you wonder what they're doing at BMW.
I've been consistently disappointed with BMW's steering in the last 2 years.
And the whole irony...
What happened here?
The whole irony of Model 3 is everybody's going on about autopilot when really just turn that stuff off and drive the car.
Yeah.
It's just good in that state.
It's a really pleasant driving experience, but then it also can be an exciting one, and it's different. Like you said, it's new.
Yeah.
So I think you might be able to get a piece of that experience driving like an e-Golf or something. Like, it's quiet, it's silent, it rides different, but it's a new experience, which is nice. Like, I love the C63 AMG, but the reality is if you buy one, you can't go drifting and drag racing and make a bunch of noise and go super fast all the time.
Yeah.
So the experience of like... Right. Well, I mean, the experience of driving those kinds of cars around... You don't get to reward yourself as much as you do
you don't
where
get
it's
to
like
explore it.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas getting in the Tesla or a similar car, but in this case the Tesla right now, like it's an interesting thing to explore at like any speed.
Yeah.
The thing that it does kind of all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can explore its acceleration potential on the commute. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, that's an interesting thing. So Jason was saying there's a friend of his who has a GT3 like RS and also a Tesla. Mm-hmm. And his wife's like, I don't get it. I get motion sick in the Tesla. I can't ride with him.
Oh, really?
The car is too fast. And he rode with him once and he realized it's not that the car is too fast. It's that the husband was driving more aggressively in the Tesla from zero because you just can and it's silent. You get away with it.
Yeah, the idea of, like, an asshole. Quote, beating on it isn't really there. You don't need to have any kind of like mechanical sympathy.
Also, you don't just need to shift at a first. You know, you don't need to worry about clutch engagement. Yeah, you just nail it.
And there's no audible signal of, ooh, you're getting kind of up there. Yeah. You know, watch out. Like, you just
go.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a fun week. I'm looking forward to it.
You should have a good time.
Yeah, it's
I'll show
nice
you the
car.
Whoopee cushion after.
Show me the whoopee cushion when we go outside.
It's great.
Outside,
you can change the speaker that it plays out of. You can change the fart
that's
sound.
Very
it's
very funny.
Oh, it's real stupid.
Wait, can we circle back to GT500? Because
we
I genuinely am interested, and we took a left at Corvette. In general, with Corvette, though, worth the money, right? I think it's...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's worth the money.
What's better than... It's a couple higher levels higher than worth the money, right? Like, the combination of features in that car, you cannot reproduce for the same money.
Yeah, it's very nice.
It's... Yeah.
It was a little... It's still pretty vetty for me.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, for what? The one that was going around the press is like 85.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one I drove was 87.
60. Our company's buying one.
You buy a base one?
We bought a $75,000 one.
Someone's got to get a base one. So, you know, there's not going to be any base press cars.
Oh, yeah, there will be. Yeah.
You think there's going to be a base press car?
Why not? Yeah. Well, that story will get out there. We'll review a base car. We'll test a base car just to see. But we bought the one you would want. With PTM, with Z51, with all the performance goodies on
it. You probably got 2LT.
Yeah, 2LT. Yeah, 2LT and...
The one I drove was 87, was 3LT.
Yep. Which, and that interior looks nice.
It was nice. I'd like to see what the difference is between 2 and 3. I don't really know. But it had a bunch of carbon fibers. Pretty decent.
Yeah.
It was pretty decent. But when I got in it, smelled like a Chevy.
You know?
1,000% Chevy smell.
Yeah.
It wasn't a new car smell either. It's a Chevy
smell. It's a traditional smell.
Mm-hmm. We know that smell.
With the C8, you know, I really enjoy driving that car on track. I really enjoy driving it on the road. And then the question is, what do you tolerate for the discount?
This is the same conversation we had when the engine was in the front.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
The conversation hasn't changed.
It still has the
Corvette.
In my view, it still has the fundamental value aspect nailed. You know, for mm-hmm. 60 grand, I mean, that car has basically wiped the Supra narrative off the
right. Like, oh, my God. Like, yeah.
And I love the Supra.
I drove the Supra back to back with it. It
yeah.
deservedly wiped the Supra narrative.
See, I really like the Supra. The
Supra's fine in isolation. Drive okay. it as part of a comparison yeah, test.
False part.
Oh, it's not good.
It's a shame.
It's okay, though, because yeah. so does the BMW M2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when you drive it next to a bunch of mid-engine stuff, yeah. it's like, pff, get out of here. But there's like, a video, by the way. I'm not just going to have that one sentence crapping on the M2.
You'll have some stuff out of it.
Yeah, I have yeah. a video of it on the track where I crap on it while driving
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Also, the RCF, which I was not kind to, the RCF track edition
yeah.
for $96,000.
Yeah. I mean, to me, see, it really shows some of the, I don't want to say faults, but lack of real aggressive, you know, design and planning. Like, C8 is kind of a miracle for 60 grand, right?
Assuming the car you get is decent, car, yes, it might not sure. be.
There's a lot of caveats there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, look at M4.
Yeah.
Right? Look at C63. Look at all those really expensive, luxury-oriented
Can't you get a C63 and an M4 for over $100,000 right now?
I think you might have trouble getting an M4 up there.
A CS, I think, might be 100 CS grand.
Might be up there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. And so, you know, a 911 starts with a manual now at like 111, 110.
Yeah, because you can only get an S, right? As a manual.
Yeah, so you're left with, if you're looking at mid-engine, you're left at 718. And unless it's the...
Don't you dare ignore my Lotus Evora GT. My good buddy Lotus Evora GT, mid-engine manual gearbox.
I haven't been in Evora for
a long
time.
Yeah, oh, we need to call Corey and get you in an Evora.
Okay. It's real
Yeah, the GT's the shit.
Okay.
Yeah,
I got to drive it. But, you know, I think... I'll get off the Corvette for the time
That's
being.
Okay.
How about that? Because we've been on it for a while. And go back to GT500.
Yeah, GT500. Sorry.
Which rocks.
So how does it manage 760 horsepower?
Really well.
Is it through an advanced traction management system or
look,
just naturally good
dynamics?
Oh, no.
It's a tuned system for it, for the car, of course. If you mash the gas from a stop, you're going to make a ton of smoke and disappear, right?
Right.
Like, obviously. But we were
It's a good-looking brake stand that you got there.
That's the factory line lock.
Oh, it's got a line lock.
Great. It's got a factory line lock.
Is it the first combination of line lock and a dual clutch gearbox? I don't know if I've ever seen that
before.
Good
question. I don't know if
line
it is or not.
Line lock plus dual clutch is very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it should be able to work in any other car, too.
Is it just an electronic brake bias control or something? Like
they're just clamping down the front brakes and not
Oh, because everything's electronic anyway, so it just goes, hey, don't worry about the back right now.
So Charger has that. Mustang GT has that.
Yeah.
So it's not like really exotic hardware. And to be honest, it's kind of fussy to get into and turn on.
I had a real hard time finding it in the last Mustang I drove.
Remember when I drove the Demon, I was like, I'll just mash the brake and mash the gas. Like, it's, I mean, come on. I don't need a line lock in this thing. It has a really effective launch control. Though I will say the delay from releasing the brake to forward acceleration is significant.
Oh, that's not good.
Not good when you're looking at a Christmas tree on a
direct
trip. Yeah, so you have to add that time into your acceleration.
Oh, no. Now you have to, like, guess your time. So it's a pronounced delay. Dump it at the first yellow.
Yeah, and
that's shitty.
Maybe in the manual it just says, every quarter mile time, just delete 0.726 seconds.
Right. It's was substantial enough for me to be like, wait a second, what's going on? Okay, now we're taking off, you know. Yeah.
The good news is... Nobody drag races GT500s.
Right.
Nobody takes GT500s to racetracks.
Well, my
GT500s are undriven.
This is true, and I would imagine that if you're a professional drag racer who's an enthusiast about drag racing, you're probably not going to rely on the launch control.
Think about how often you see a 2011 to 2014 GT500 on the road.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say once or twice a year is how often I see one outside of a garage.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
get driven.
People buy them and they squirrel them the fuck away.
Yeah.
And they show up on DuPont Registry 10 years later with 18 miles on them.
And what, they just hang there for a while?
no one drives GT500s. Yeah, they're very difficult to find out in the wild.
The older ones, too, weren't particularly great to drive, too.
The 07 to 09? Oh, they were terrible.
They were not good.
No. 10, they got good.
Yeah,
11, they got much better.
Yep.
12, they went too far.
The 200-mile-an-hour one. 200-mile-an-hour one, quote-unquote.
That one went a little too far.
That was a little nuts.
That was Carroll Shelby was like, I want you to build me Mustang Bill
060. 662 horsepower, man.
I need 662 horsepower.
Yeah, that's what GT500
is. Oh, Zach, what did you find on Auto Tempest? Anything for sale?
I mean, yeah, you can get an 07 GT500 for a current bid of $11,000.
Well, that's a piece of shit.
800 horsepower. 2013, 44,000. 07, 30,000.
Why would you buy
that? 2013 for 44 is value well held. Does that have miles on it?
Well, it's only value held if somebody buys it, right?
That's a good point. Does it have miles on it?
We'll find out.
It's a lot
after
of money.
The break.
It is, but those, a lot of money. But people ask in the 60s for those.
Why?
With like no miles on them.
Because
it's the most powerful ever. It's the most powerful ever still until.
Current bid on an 07 40th anniversary edition is 35.
What's the most
or you
point,
can go get a newer one for, you know, 40.
What's the point of most powerful if you don't drive it?
Bragging?
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of people out there. You're into guns now. There are a lot of people out there that bought, like, you know, a Barrett 50 yeah. or a 48, and they
you
never
go to the range
shoot.
And they're like, look
once.
At this.
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. $20 a bullet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know.
Is it $20 a bullet?
You can
some
rent
of the more
one
esoteric
there,
stuff
yes.
can
just,
be.
It's pretty
yeah.
big.
Nice.
There's a lot of about humans that is just like, you want to have it.
I don't get that mindset at all. You buy something, you use it. Like,
yeah,
like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
that's my mindset. Like yeah. I'm not fragile with things that I buy. I buy them expecting to use them.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
yeah. I don't
do you think some people bought these GT500s and drove them and went, oh, fuck, that's scary.
Well,
and they're like, now they can say they have it.
Talking
but.
About, like, I mean, it's the same thing with guns, too. Same thing with firearms, where people will buy a Viper or a ZR1 and be like, yeah, this thing's terrifying.
Yeah.
Ooh, and then be afraid to use it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why'd you buy it? Get better at using this thing that you own. You
yeah.
know? That's the point. If not, don't just say, like, well, this thing's a real widowmaker and I'm a brave guy for driving.
I like how people say that as if you can't use less throttle. It's like this fuck. Like a Viper is going to get away from you if you aren't a complete moron.
A car does not care what your intentions are. You put the input in, you get an output,
yeah.
right? Like, the better you are at using it, the better, the more it will reward you. Get better at using it and
yeah.
use it, right?
But, like, you don't have to go flat out of every corner.
No.
Like, you don't, like... That's not why you buy yeah. a 600 horsepower car,
yes.
so you can do that.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not the point.
Unless the car lets you.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
it might, well, it might,
yeah.
but like,
yeah.
if you can't, you just don't.
Don't,
yeah.
So that was actually getting back to the GT500.
Yeah.
That was the most impressive part about it, is it really accepted power out of low speed corners. Second, third gear, you could roll it on
really
aggressively.
Like, did it do that, like, could you hear, do like the timing
no.
retarding
nope.
thing? Really?
Nope, right on it. I never got to a point where I felt like I was challenging the rear tires.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, track I've never driven before. I was being a little cautious.
Because that outfield track, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun track.
GT500's hurt me in the past, right? Like,
oh, did you crash one?
No, I didn't crash one, but, like, you know, I've definitely put one sideways in places where I wasn't
yeah.
anticipating, right?
Yeah.
And with that in mind, I was like, okay, I'm going to be cautious. And then, oh, wow, this works. This, okay. Got to a point where it's just feeding in full throttle out of low speed corners, and it's good. It's gone.
Does it have ceramic brakes?
No.
So are they good?
They're good. Yeah. Real good. Yeah, you can, for a, their claim to weight's 4,200 pounds. Imagine lighter if you get the carbon fiber track pack and
it's
all that
4,200
stuff.
4,200 fucking pounds?
That's their claim to weight.
Ugh.
And the brakes kick butt. So the biggest...
With carbon fiber wheels?
What does a ZL1 weigh?
Unplugged.
Less than that, I want to say.
I think less than that.
I think it might be 4,000, though. It's still pretty heavy.
They're heavy.
But those brakes are massive. Those calipers, there's a Brembo rep at the drive event. He said... He didn't want to claim that they were the biggest calipers they make, but they're in that conversation.
Nice.
They're bigger.
They get
than,
delivered in pizza boxes. Just like,
the
calipers are like this big.
The M2 comp I drove yeah. at Performance Car of the Year had 15.7-inch brakes.
Okay, these are 16.5.
What?
Yeah, 16.54, right, on the front.
God.
Yeah, the rears are, what, 14.5? 16,
wait.
Yeah. Yeah, my Integra GSR had 16-inch wheels.
That's
right?
So,
like,
crazy.
Absolutely crazy. They're,
I think
they're
the track massive. The Trackhawk's got 17 and change. I think that's the biggest.
That's ridiculous.
That's ever gone on a car.
Yeah.
Is Trackhawk. What do you have? 16 and
okay.
a half is Chiron.
Yeah.
Bugatti Chiron is 16 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Ceramic 16 and a half.
That's
go to Zach. Go to my Instagram. You can see the picture of my Aston from with the wheel off when I got the tire. So there, look how small. This is a 2003 supercar, 4,000-pound supercar, and look how tiny that Brembo brake rotor is. It's fucking bad.
How much does that thing weigh?
The car?
Yeah,
it's probably 4,000.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it. I don't know.
Well, it probably wasn't designed for 140 to. 30 stops repeatedly on a track.
I took
track,
it at Monticello
right?
once.
Yeah.
It was fucking horrible.
Yeah, right.
Let me look up the weight. Vanquish curb weight. It was absolutely terrible. I set 4,000 pounds.
Okay.
I set the fucking brakes on fire.
Yeah.
It was terrible. I had to do upgrade fluid.
So GT500 in, you know, we had two hot lap sessions, right? Like, it was a pretty limited track time.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really challenged the brakes into a couple corners and no problem whatsoever. I mean, you could trail brake that thing right around.
Yeah.
I really liked that. I was really impressed by the braking capability in that car.
Do you remember how wide the front tires are? Are
they 305s?
They're 305s.
305s. I want to say 305s and 315s.
Tramlining?
Yeah, tramlines.
It's got to be
yeah,
tramlining.
Yeah,
bad.
I mean,
you know, I at this level of Mustang, I start accepting some, like, hey, it's a
similar... in that much tire, like, I think at a certain point, you have to, you're going to have some concessions, right?
Yeah,
like,
and it's...
Yeah, but it's just an example of, like, a way that mid-engine and rear-engine cars are kind of better, because when you have a front-engine car with this much power, you need to run this insanely wide front tire, which when you drive the car, and okay, fine, it works, it's good, and it helps it turn in and everything like that, but when you, you know, run that kind of tire on the street, on the freeways here in LA, it's going to dart about.
To me, it's like when you have 300 pound-feet of torque in a front-drive car, you can't complain about torque steer.
Right.
It's physics.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
That's just part
it
of
is
the equation,
what it is,
right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't adjust that.
But that comes with the territory.
Exactly.
You know, that, what that means is that you may have a less relaxing highway experience because you've got to keep two hands on the wheel because you don't know when the rut might jerk the wheel one way or the other.
Yeah, it's totally accurate. And it did tram alignment. It wasn't terrible.
Hannah, my wife, just discovered this trait in cars
because
I've got her driving the F-Type now. It's got an F-Type S, and it doesn't do it that bad. I think the front tires are like 265s or something, but like she doesn't know what that is.
What that sensation
she's
is.
Trying to describe it. She's like, first it feels like the wheel's about to fall off, then the car turns the other way, and I'm like, and I'm trying to figure out what she's mean, and I'm like, oh. I was like, you mean when the trucks wear little ruts in the road and the car catches them and moves away? She's like, yes, that thing! I was like, that is called tramlining. Sports cars do it.
Yeah. So it had an acceptable amount to my mind for the intention of the car, which is a sports car with carbon fiber wheels and the biggest, you know, brake rotors in the face of the earth, right?
Yeah, the only reason I asked, because that was pretty much my only knock on driving the 350R on the road.
Yes.
It was almost perfect in every other except it was darty as shit on the highway because of the tram lining. So I'm sure this was even the same or worse.
It was acceptable to me because of the car. Yeah. And I will say, relative to GT350, I know people have already made this comparison out there. It's no big, nothing obvious, but like GT350 is to GT3 what GT500 is to GT2 RS.
Right, right.
Right.
Yep.
It's that setup. And it even comes down to like the character in the engine, right? The GT500 sounds all business like, ton of noise, crazy power. The GT350 has all the character.
Right.
Because that thing goes to 9,000 or whatever it is RPM.
8250.
Yeah.
Where does this go? 7?
Ooh, 7? 75 maybe?
Yeah.
I forget off the top of my head. It's got a dual clutch. I'm not looking at the tech.
Right.
Right.
And it goes I remember reading, I think Jason said, it goes pretty high.
It does go
pretty
high.
Surprising.
But I wish it had the sound of the 03 Terminator Cobras. Yeah.
I bet. So GT500s in the past, if you recall, which I'm sure you do, all you've got to do is do the aftermarket air intake, and then it brings back all the blower whine.
That's what I want.
Yeah, yeah. You can get it. I mean, in the past, that was how you did it.
Yeah.
Is that Ford always figured that the standard owner would not want all that blower whine, and that you could get, I think even from Ford Racing, just like the quote, cold air intake, and it's just all the blower whine in the world.
I don't want any more power. Just give me that little blower.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be totally.
Fun. That's going to be totally.
Yeah.
It sounds so good.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah, but the car rocks. I mean, I got nothing but good things to say about it. Outside of the launch control being a little slow to engage. And what else?
That's a pretty chill knock.
Yeah.
That's pretty
I mean, the bucket seats are bucket seats.
Are they the same as the 350s, the Recaros?
Probably, but I'm, you know, don't quote me on that.
Are they not great, though?
They're no lumbar. So for me, I'm a little sensitive to that.
I need that.
I also don't like Porsche's bucket seats. Like I can't do them.
I would probably, if I bought one of those, have a custom lumbar pillow made for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not the worst. They're shaped well, but if you have a lumbar need, it is notably absent.
Yeah. So those were my only real complaints, which aren't really complaints.
They're all right.
I think that's an okay. I mean, if the car is 80 grand, like...
They're not complaints. You're a car critic criticizing a car. It's literally your job.
Yeah, this is true.
They're not complaints.
Well, okay. I say complaints so people listening don't go like, well, can't do this car now. Because it's not, in my view, it's like, it's a pretty minor critique.
You just got to sit in it first. But I think there are cars out there that have like mechanical lumbar where like you move a lever and then you just feel something push against you. Now I'm saying it's inexpensive. I don't know how to make seats. Someone at Recaro is yelling right now. But it seems like there's a lot of ways to add lumbar support to a car and to just skip it on this car that has like everything else, including electronic line lock.
to me, the same story goes to Porsche, where like Porsche's bucket seats, I can't, like, if I drive that car for more than 20 minutes, my back is like, get out.
Oh, really?
Get out. Yeah, it's really
mine's not that bad. I mean, I did 1,200 miles in them in a couple weeks ago, and it was cool.
And there are people in the office, Alistair Weaver, my boss, like, he loves those seats. He's fine. So it's a body percentile thing.
And they make them
me.
In different sizes.
Yeah. Oh, really? The seats?
I think they do. Okay. I believe they do. McLaren does. You know the McLaren HR Geiger seat? Okay. The LT seat? Yeah. Which is like impossible to get in and out of. Yeah. But once you're sitting in it, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It holds your body in the absolute perfect ergonomic position. It's amazing.
That's good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
Good seats are tough. But, I mean, it's tough to find, but when you do, it's like, oh, why can't they all
Mercedes, or AMG does it the best. Yeah. Because they employ all those spine surgeons to make their seats fucking awesome. Yeah. Like S63, ooh, that's a good one. Mm. It's got the hot rock massage. It does.
Oh, yeah, they have a simulated
stone massage.
Well, Mercedes also has all that active comfort stuff where you put it on, it's like a five-minute video that tells you how to move your legs and move your
really?
Hips. Oh, dude. I don't know if it's made down from like the S classes or the SL classes, but yeah, they have like this thing you can turn on and it tells you how to rotate your shoulder and move
like
your neck.
To keep good. Well, the spine surgeons were definitely on
it's
this.
So they funny. Do that. What I think when we flew to Thailand, the airline, I've been on an airline that was Singapore Air or something, and they did the same thing where it was like 8 hours into the flight, a video just came on all the screens.
It's like
and
it was, Zumba time.
It was like, it's like, here's how to move and exercise so you don't get a blood clot.
Pedals and come out from underneath the
I couldn't
chair.
Understand anything, but
that's actually, so the engine's funny. Down. You're going to have to pedal.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So we have a thumbs up on C8 and a thumbs up on GT500.
Yeah, it's a real good time to be into sports cars right now.
I was kind of bummed when I was like, why didn't I get invited to the GT500? And then I realized Travis sent me to the R8 launch because someone else from Road and Track got to hook up. I think
I saw Camisa there.
Yeah, that's a very Camisa thing to do.
And I think
what did
he
complain about?
I think he liked the car a lot.
He did?
I think he did. I mean,
he's
a
fucking tough one.
We were on different waves.
He's a very tough one to please.
Yeah, I was
he liked it a lot.
Did he?
Yeah.
His Instagram review is good?
Yeah, but he liked it a lot. It revs a 7500.
Oh,
and,
there you go.
And
he wrote a lot. Go see Camisa's Instagram for his review of it. It's on Instagram, Jason Camisa. I'll get one when they come out here. Yeah. I'm excited though. I mean, what's not to like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a 760 horsepower Mustang that can put power down.
Yeah.
And handle well too. How is that a bad
thing?
And
it has, I imagine it at slow speeds, it has good manners.
Yeah.
It's like whatever.
I mean, we drove it in Vegas, so again, tough to gauge ride quality and stuff based on the roads, but it was totally livable. Even the hardcore track pack version, which is lower and, you know, should be firmer and all that, was fine.
Yeah. That's good. That's what I like. It's so amazing that they can build these cars where the envelopes are just like insane-o fucking power and also like 25 miles a gallon maybe, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
because you got a crazy overdrive, you can just park it in and forget about it.
I got in the high 20s in a McLaren 720.
That's insane.
I mean, that's just like ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's just crazy that you can do something like that. Things like 800 horsepower.
It's great.
It's fun.
It's great. It's a real good time.
So good.
It's the benefit of all this efficiency, right?
Yeah.
That's the side effect, is you get good fuel economy as well as a gazillion horsepower.
I feel like in the 90s, you know, and in early 2000s, I was always complaining, like, I kind of wish I was alive like the late 60s, early 70s. Like, drag racing, hot rods, muscle cars, all that shit before smog came in. You know, it seemed like it was more fun. And then now, I disagree with my previous self, because it's like you can get 700 horsepower with all these systems around you. Yeah. Can be comfortable, or it can handle, which is a good thing. It can stop, which is a good thing. Like, cars can do so much.
I think you're on the right track from a design perspective, though.
And by the way, if you want the old shit, you can. That's still here. You can still have
you can
still
that.
Buy it. Very true.
Yeah. That's here too.
There's just more laws. I feel.
Yeah.
But yes,
it's a bit more challenging, and you know they've been around for 40 years now. So, yeah.
Didn't change much. I don't know. I feel like so much of that stuff is so durable.
I try to drive my truck once a month, and every time I do, it's like, oh yeah, this is
what that truck.
Like,
the orange one.
I gotta
right?
bring it by sometime.
Oh, that thing was
great.
Cool.
Yeah, you gotta drive it.
I'd love to.
It's definitely a harsh reminder what driving these things is actually like. They actually at the GT500 launch, they had a 67 GT500.
Oh yeah, did you drive it?
Yeah, I drove it around the parking lot really
quick.
You're
like, what a shit box.
You know, product of its time.
Yeah.
Right? And it kind of looks funky in today's cast against the context of like a modern car today. But it's a neat car. I mean,
I'll tell you what, when I drive, it's very pretty.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's the same color as the one we saw right outside here.
Oh,
walking
really?
In.
I wonder if it
No, it was a convertible.
You saw, yeah.
Right, literally as we as Carlos and I walked up the stairs, there was same color, probably same year convertible, just cruising by on Inglewood.
Whoa,
very
fun.
But it's whenever I drive older European cars, like the night, like when I drove a Gullwing and when I first drove a Porsche 356, it was a lot nicer than I expected it to be. And then whenever I drive a 60s muscle car, I'm like, wow, this is fucking way worse than it looks.
I mean, there's also like both of those cars cost way more money than any muscle car,
of course,
at the time. But also they had, I mean, there was an engineering difference. They had twisty roads, not big roads. Like, there's,
it's not like a mystery why. It just is a fucking observation.
It is a funny thing.
I mean, my truck feels dangerous at 50 miles an hour, assuming that's actually true 50. I don't know, the speedometer's, you know, doing this thing.
I love the bouncy speedometer.
Yeah, it's great. I remember the first time I drove a 300 SL Roadster.
It's nice, right?
It was, you know, I've always been like, don't meet your heroes. Like, the reality is never as it matches your dreams, your fantasy. Yeah. And I drove this thing. And I was like, oh no, this is perfect.
Yeah.
This is everything I hoped for and more. This
you
car
could daily one of those.
Oh, that car
They're
is
pretty
so
easy
sweet.
To pretty easy to live with.
So easy to drive, and just the sound of that engine under the sound of the throttle, the sound of the intake on that thing is just fantastic.
Yeah, I got to drive one for a video. It was pretty glorious.
When I drove it, we were doing a group shoot, and I was in the car. I'm like, I'm not getting out of this. Sorry, everybody. I'm going to eat lunch in here. I'm not getting out of this because when I do, somebody else is going to drop in.
They're them at 356s too. They're really easy. They're so easy.
They're
can't
light,
believe it.
Everything's nice.
Yeah. What else? Anything else other than these two beautiful, like high end sports cars?
That's been the most exciting stuff lately, if I'm totally honest. I spent a lot of time in our Model 3. These are getting pretty far back in terms of in terms of time.
Your Instagram is needs to be updated a little bit.
You
sir.
Know, it probably should be. But the GT500 review is on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Edmonds. I'll plug that really smoothly.
Yeah, no, you should.
And we've been doing a lot of stuff on that channel too. We're really focusing our game.
Are you? Pivoting to video? Pivot to video, but away from fucking Facebook.
The pivot happened a while ago, right? But we've been doing a lot of stuff lately with regard to video that I'm really proud of because I'm trying to drive a lot of the creative there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm proud of this, a lot of the stuff that we have up. We're trying new things, you know, making content that should be more interesting for a lot of people to watch.
Road Noise is a good name. I like
Road
the
Noise,
name Road Noise.
Edmonds.com/Road Noise.
Yeah, that's
real
a good,
good
name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That took a long time to come up with.
It does, don't
all
they?
All the good car pun names are. Names are taken.
Names are hard as shit.
Names
yeah.
are real hard.
You know, it took me like 6 months of just writing words to come up with the smoking tire.
And then when
tire.
You find it, you're like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get in the super chat, folks. I know there's a lot that people want to talk about. Boy, does that tire look a lot like the original smoking tire? Just
I have
saying.
No idea what you're talking about. You know, you have tire shapes, right? How many tire shapes do you
I don't
is,
know.
Are there?
Every
in the
tire
world?
Logo, yeah. tire tread pattern comes after like the Pirelli P0 from like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
What do we got, Zach? Let's go to the people for a little bit. Oh, there's already many things to discuss.
All right.
Oh, let's see. Fuel Aaron says, in your opinions, who are the best drivers in your industry? Okay. Randy's very good.
There are race cars drivers in our industry now. So
J.R. Hildebrand writes for fucking Road and Track. Yeah. He's up there.
Yeah.
Chris
they
Harris.
They kind of ruined our game, didn't they?
Yeah.
A little bit.
All these pros come in and we're like, oh, crap, they can write too.
Yeah. Chris Harris is great, obviously. Yeah. There's no like.
Justin Bell's probably pretty good.
Yeah, he does all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, the guys who are the shoes, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, the guys who made their living driving, racing the cars, and they're like, oh, I'm going to retire and start writing about them, or, you know, slowly move into that.
Yeah, and then if you're talking about fast club racers, Jack Baruth, Travis, Sam Smith, they're all fast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay. You're pretty good.
That's pretty fast.
Kamisa's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of good ones.
Micah over at Kelley Blue Book's really fast,
too. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think... I don't know about best, but that's a pretty comprehensive list of people you should listen to about dynamic vehicle
right?
dynamics.
Yeah.
Daniel says, what is the best minivan currently out there? That and then he says, parentheses, like you guys would know. You know who would fucking know? Zach Clapman, minivan extraordinaire, production behind the scenes. You have driven all the minivans.
I mean, it depends on what you're doing with a van. You know, if you need to store a bunch of shit and drive quickly on a racetrack, you want Chrysler, Dodge.
The Dodge Caravan,
Dodge
Sport.
Caravan,
yeah,
of course. Or I think they make an RT version because
they have
black.
They have an SWB.
Oh, okay,
they've got a short wheelbase.
It's like
non-grand caravan, the short
and,
caravan.
You can shift it manually, sort of.
Perfect.
And Stone Go, which is a great invention.
Stone Go's good.
But if you want to be comfortable, you should get like a Sienna.
Sienna
like,
we
ran one
Odyssey.
Of those once, and it was just like, oh, this is how I want it to be on the highway, and like. the Caravan's fun on the track for production, but it's not a great like for transporting people long distances.
Minivans are really challenging to review because so many people buy, like, it's a small group of really passionate owners who have extremely different expectations of what they should be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course. I'm like, how is it on a racetrack? Who gives a fuck?
No, I mean, there are retirees who just want to be able to take the seats out, show the seats, and put a bunch of stuff on it. There are parents who have families and soccer matches they have to transport. Like, it's a really diverse range, and they're all using that van to the maximum of its capabilities, unlike any truck owner or sports car owner.
So is Zach.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been impressed with Honda, Dodge, and Toyota when I've rented them. I had a Nissan van that just had like strange ergonomics, strange visibility, it rode like shit.
That was
no good. But the other one's fine. Yeah. Determine what you need it for.
I will plug P-Vody, the Road and Track Performance Van of the Year test. I'm not bullshitting. We did it.
Yeah.
We had Ross Bentley drive.
Okay.
Who is another one I would add up to the top of Mr. Fuel Aaron's question. Ross Bentley, author of Speed Secrets. So I won't give it away. I'm not going to scoop the scoop. But we had three vans.
Okay.
And Ross said it was the most fun he had in 3 days.
Where'd you guys run them?
Thunderhill West. Thunderhill. Bro, Ross was mobbing. He didn't give a fuck.
Tell me he got a jump shot in there too.
Oh, we had wheels in there.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, there's wheels
in
the air for sure.
Oh, great.
No, yeah, the wheel was, he was enjoying himself.
Good.
We had the Town and Country.
Yeah.
We had I think we had a Caravan. We had a Pacifica. We might have had an Odyssey also.
Okay.
Yeah, it was good.
That's good times.
Yeah. Andrew Wilson says, I bought an E36 M3 as a second car with a Mark 7 Golf R as a first car. Did I make a good what? Green, what is that?
It says green slick top, but it's an M345 from. Did I make a good choice? Did I get a good deal?
I don't understand the question.
We don't know what you spent on it, but I think a slick top is hard to find. Boston green is an awesome looking color.
M3 four door five speed. That's what that means. M345.
I love those.
That's the best combo of that car.
Green
isn't
sedan,
it?
Yes.
Green sedan five speed is the best combo of that car.
Yeah.
Did he make a great decision?
I think he made a good choice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a good deal? I have absolutely no idea what you paid.
Or what condition it's in. If it was from Boston, bad idea.
In theory.
It's going to be fucking rusted, dude.
Should be nice. Anthony says, one car your dad liked and you'd never guess. Like, does that mean it's a car that your dad would surprise
you? My dad liked the Dodge Stealth. And I was very surprised by
that.
Because he does not care about most cars. But this was like in the 90s. He's like, you know what I like? The Dodge Stealth.
That's really funny. Do you have one?
I have one.
Uh-huh.
So my dad was a car guy.
Yeah.
Loved sports cars. Had a 914 in college that he autocrossed, did everything. Loved his Chevy Impala work car.
Nice. Like an Impala SS96?
Nope. Like How old? A what modern what? Impala
Oh,
rental
like the
car
front wheel
edition.
Drive.
Yes.
Oh, what did he like about it?
It's big.
Just the space.
It's big.
Just big and spacious.
It's big.
I like it.
Yep. Yep.
My dad, you know that my mom had a series of Lexus RXs. At one point, she had five concurrently Lexus RXs. The first one she bought when they first came out, except she didn't buy it. The first RX my dad bought for himself. He's a 6'5", and he bought a 1998 RX 300 for himself to commute in. And he never fucking fit in it right. His knees were always jammed to the dash. The steering wheel was canted away like a fucking Grumman panel truck because it didn't fit under his legs. The seat never went quite far back enough. And after about a year, my mom took over and became the patriarch of the Lexus family. But that, I was like, Dad, what's wrong with you? And he's like, I just like how it drives like a car.
Yeah.
So that was a weird one.
He was patient zero for crossovers.
Patient zero for crossovers. Yep. Finally, he has one he likes. They got rid of the oldest Toyota, the oldest Lexus in South Carolina, and my dad bought a CPO like 14,000 mile Highlander, Toyota Highlander Limited from like a year ago.
Yeah,
it's pretty sweet. Yeah. Super comfortable.
It's got that really clever little shelf system. Wire pass through.
We love the shelf system.
I don't know why more cars don't have that.
And it's got a ton of room.
Yeah.
It's just so comfortable. Like, they've done such a nice job with that Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how terrible the first one was?
Yeah. Oh, the four-cylinder ones
what
from that generation were not pretty
nightmare.
Great either. But,
Andrew Wilson says, I'm coming to LA in November. Is a Peterson Vault tour worth it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going to the Peterson is worth it, and if you're already there, getting the Vault Tour is worth it.
We were actually there this week filming our awards for the end of the year. Did a night shoot, and it was really fun to walk around that museum with nobody there in the middle of the night. Really neat.
It like emptied, like yeah. Night of the Museum
yeah.
shit?
Yeah, we were basically there.
Well, the cars come alive.
Last night, the night before last. Right. Start talking and driving around. And,
you know what I laughed at when I was there? They had the Transformers, like, whatever, Bumblebee, Beetle. And then next to the Beetle, I just looked at the Beetle, I'm like, there's no way that the amount of metal and stuff.
This does not work out.
The robot would not fit in that car.
Is that your problem with the movie?
That's one of them. But it was just own. Like, I was there.
There's
I'm
no
like,
way this works.
Just like, well, they're side by side. It's so funny. Like, there's no fucking
Forget
way.
The fact that it's artificial intelligence from space, right?
We can program like, that. We can There's only You can't have two pieces of matter in the same place. This is one physical property of physics that we know to be true.
They, Peterson's really embracing the Hollywood thing, though. That whole ground floor is pretty much prop cars now, huh?
Did you see the R8 race car that has the rear engine exploded?
Yeah, it's very cool.
So cool.
Yeah. And I was so happy to see the police car from Demolition Man, but not as a police car. Like, did you see this?
You might
have skipped it. Demolition Man is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's a solid movie.
And so the police car, which has self-driving and all these interesting things that sort of came later.
Yeah.
I guess it was sort of this weird concept that the GM made as a concept. The Demolition Man people wanted to use it for the movie, and so GM built them like a dozen of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they built some as police cars and some as like regular cars. And so they had one in the museum
That's
that was
cool.
like a regular car, and I'd never seen it out of the police car guys. And it was like kind of rad.
That's
actually
really cool.
It had some really interesting like features, like the like Henry Miller style chair seats with that kind of mesh, that tight mesh, like a good desk chair. It's very interesting.
That's neat. I'd recommend this, whoever this is, to see what displays they have going on around that time too,
because
they
special
rotate stuff in and out. It's really neat.
I think the
neat.
Jesse Combs thing is done. That was cool though.
It was
it wasn't like a lot of stuff, but it was presented in a really interesting way.
Because they put it together fast. So, and it was a very good job for
it's him. It's a legit museum, that place.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
It's really cool.
It's great. And while you're there, you always want to take a walk through the parking lot, too, because people drive really interesting stuff there, and so you can just see people driving their weird shit on their road trips, you know?
Yeah.
Jake says, I dry stack boats, and a problem we run into is fluids ruining the interiors of boats below. Are you worried about this happening in your building? Good question, Jake, because we have our quad vehicle stackers. Unlike boats, where the V hulls are kind of just placed into these cradles. My trays are full tray designs. So you drive the car up onto the tray, but it's not just two wheels. It's a full tray. So if any fluids drip in the car, they drip onto the tray and not onto the car below.
So it might the implication here is that boat dry stacks don't have a V-shaped wedge of anything.
No.
That's slight.
It's so, like two carpeted bars that they just sit on.
I'm going to go prototype this.
Well, but think about how many hulls are different shapes, widths, depths.
So you have some way to stretch them in and out. It's a three-piece system.
Well,
right?
Look, here's what happens a lot. They pull the boat out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's still dripping wet with seawater. They stack it above the boat, and it just drips seawater into the interior of the boat below.
We can bolt this thing right onto the bottom. Sure. Like, let's get this done.
You're honest. It's just plastic in a V,
And it's actually self-draining because the boat's angled already. Yeah. So
you'd be like the guy that invented the panels on the side of semi-trucks.
Is this
that divert
live
the
right
air?
Now?
Yes, but only
crap. A few hundred people. I need to write this down and mail it to myself.
yeah,
too late
invention.
Now. Invention time.
Market this. The being on a podcast is the same as a patent, by the way.
That's true.
It's like time. It's like mailing the idea to yourself, you know, and not opening it. It's like the ghetto patent. Nathan says, Matt, could I drive my R32 GTR with a helmet on? I'd love to track one, but at 6'4", I don't know if it's possible.
It seems like he owns it.
He's cutting it close.
He owns the helmet?
I'm sure he owns the helmet.
Put it on
not
and get
the
inside.
Car.
Oh, he doesn't. He doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
Oh,
own
I
the
didn't
car.
Get that. Okay, okay.
That would be.
Yeah.
Dude, unfortunately.
Hey, man, I don't want to go outside. So here's $5. Will my helmet fit on my head in the car that's outside?
That car was probably built for very short.
I never tried, and
people.
I don't know is the answer. But if I had to guess, and I think if you go back and watch the video that I did with my car when I owned it, I'm pretty sure my head was pretty close.
That was an issue I remember on our 240SX as well. I mean, you want to put that, if you put an aftermarket seat in, you want to make sure it's low.
Yeah.
But I imagine with R32s, there's a robust enough aftermarket, you could probably get really skinny rails that could relocate that seat down.
Yeah, I mean, if you really are interested in track work and you're 6'4",
honestly, I would say you should look into a seat and have it bolted to the floor, and you'll be really comfortable. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do. I don't think you'll fit in the regular seat comfortably with a helmet on. But like, what I would do is I'd get on social media and just look for someone in your town that's got a Skyline, and just will let you sit in it for a minute. And yeah, I assure you, someone in your town will let you sit in their Skyline to see if you fit. I assure you. Marcello says, Alfa Stelvio or a Buick Tour-X for a fun family daily driver. Okay.
Are you throwing darts in a board now? Or
I
what?
Get, like, I mean, I get questions
hey
like
man,
this.
They both have five doors.
Yeah.
I drove a Stelvio, and my impression, and I didn't drive the really fast one. I drove the slow one. My impression was it was a Mazda CX-5 with a turbo on it. Yeah. Now, Mazda now makes a CX-5 with a turbo on it, so I would say get that.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a really fun-to-drive SUV, like, Mazda's probably the direction to go to.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, Stelvio is pretty fun from what I remember from the drive event, but I remember, like, not...
So much turbo lag. A crazy true, yeah. amount of turbo
yeah,
lag.
Yeah, but, like, also, neither of those would be my first choice for...
Right.
So if it has to be one of those two.
I like the Tour-X. We had one on Proving Grounds. Like, it was good looking, other than the giant Buick badge in the front. But
yo,
like,
how uncool is good. The Buick badge?
But it's also huge. We could fit, I think, a 6-inch suction cup on the front of it, and that is rare. Mercedes is getting there. But that's a test for, like, all right, calm down. We know who you are.
The Buick badge is so not cool. It's so old
shields,
school
right?
looking. Yeah. Yeah, it just looks old as fuck.
Probably due for a modernization.
Be a fun video
or something.
Is ask like 8-year-olds and 15-year-olds, like, do you know what a Buick is? Like, I'm not trying to make fun of the brand. Like, it'd be interesting to see how aware they are of it.
Yeah. And then do that test in China.
Yeah. Oh, good point. Yeah.
I get it. But it's weird. Brad Brownell from of Radwood fame. He's one of the Radwood guys. He has a Tour-X and he loves it.
Yeah, I remember the Tour-X being a pretty cool little car.
Isn't it? It's basically an Opel Outback,
I
right?
So.
I'm pretty sure what you're looking at is an Opel Outback with a Buick badge.
It's pretty quick too.
Yeah,
my Buick knowledge is a little hazy. If you'll forgive me.
Yeah, the last Buick I drove was when they brought back the GS moniker.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, I drove it, I was like, wow, this would be a great Saab. Okay. Justin says, what do y'all think about meth injection maintenance? Meth
injection. Don't do drugs, kids.
Sorry,
cheap joke.
I don't really like those kind of like power adders. They seem annoying to me.
It seems like it's one of those things that definitely works.
Yeah.
But I don't want to... have to think about that all the
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
Like, you know, high performance stuff, I just want stuff that just works all the time without thinking about it.
Yeah.
The comparison I would make is, like, I build computers all the time. Like, I like building computers. I do it every couple of years. And you can do the same kind of crazy buku, like, water injection stuff that really makes it, just make it conservative so it just runs every time. You don't have to worry about tinkering with all these little details to keep it working. I know it's popular, I know it works, but I can't imagine, oh wait, I don't have 100 horsepower because I didn't fill up my injectors, and I have to have a separate fuel storage in my garage now to make this work. It just seems so complicated.
Almost every time I've gone to make a film with a car that uses these, we've run out.
Yeah.
Almost every time. And like, I've never found that the trade-off is worth the headache of trying to deal with the tank of shit.
Also, oh, go ahead.
I think a lot of people, like, the OEMs do it, like the BMW, what was it called?
Well, that's water.
Oh, right. To cool
sorry, meth injections is like a power adder, but people want to see that number and be able to put it on the forum or think about it, but if you can't
it
use it that
point.
Often. That's honestly, if you can't use
like,
it.
Why
like,
not? If you're not using it, it's fantasy anyway.
Yeah.
My favorite was...
It's like putting nitrous and never using
right?
it.
Right?
This guy, he had a 900 horsepower shop truck. It was an F-150, looks like nothing, and he put a blower on it that's good for like 2,000 horsepower, but he has 9. He's like, yeah, because I just run it 5 PSI. I don't want it to blow up. I'm like, you're smart. You build drag engines. Like, it's under stress.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to add these things to get 10 and get 20 and get 30 more horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't... I could go on about that, but I don't get the appeal of modern sports cars, we were talking about this. I'm never wanting for more power.
No.
I've never got out of a modern sports car above, let's say, 40, 50 grand and been like, you know, this would be good if it had another 75 horsepower. I feel like that about the BRZ and the 2086.
Right.
I feel like that about... That may be it. Like, everything from a Mustang GT upwards, I'm like, this is good.
Lots
I'm happy
of power.
With this. Yeah. Yeah. If you feel like you're running out of power, I guarantee you're not. You know, get some driver training.
In the mountains here, peak usable power is like 400.
That's even less. I mean, you use less power, get better gearing, and, you know, start driving better.
True.
Yeah.
Glenn says, how much can a novice learn about performance driving from a good simulator game, i.e. Assetto Corsa or Project Cars, with a wheel and pedal setup? I think a decent amount.
Yeah. I would say it gets the theory part right, the basics mm-hmm. of it. You lose the sense of inertia and movement, yeah. and that is a big indicator of feedback and, you know, what the wheels are doing, what the tires are doing. Also, that's a big element of fear, which is most what holds up most people in driving.
Right.
Like, it's easy to do 10th braking in a simulator because you're not worrying about flying off the track. So it gets you maybe 30%?
I think if you combine it with some yes. real world experience on a real racetrack in a real car, you can get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
And if you're going to a new track, it can certainly improve your learning curve. But it is not a full on substitute for real driving.
If he's asking as a rookie just learning the basics, right? That was the question.
Novice.
Yeah, that's a good avenue to go down. Yeah,
it'll help. It definitely helps you with racing.
Absolutely.
Like, it'll help you learn how to like set up a pass and like, you know, do racing shit. But in terms of like the basics of vehicle dynamics at the limit, like, it's not really a good substitute.
Yeah, it'll get you. It'll start you on the right path.
Mm.
So it's a good idea. So good. Do it.
Yeah. Eve 36 says, I read that name exactly as it's written.
That's so
200K. Would you spend 200K for a singer-fined version of an S54-powered BMW E30?
That's very specific.
Because he's referring to one that I drove. Icon is building what I assume will be a $200,000 version of a BMW 2002. Yeah, it's got a 230 drivetrain under it.
He's been talking about this for a bit, I remember.
It's got like all like keyless entry and like all this crazy, you know, like all the modern BMW systems under a 2002.
Yeah.
No, I would tap out at that point. You know, that's the buku burn the money amount of money.
Yeah.
If I'm spending 200K, I need some of it back eventually.
You're assuming that I have a level of wealth that like $200,000 is not an issue, but in my current situation, I'd be like, oh no.
No.
Yeah, I have a certain threshold.
Well, I think also like a good modded E30 for me, the joy is driving it a certain way and the way it feels, but I wouldn't get out and like look at it. Like if it was modded, I'd be like, that looks cool, but it looks like performance. Whereas a Singer Porsche, like, it's got a curve. It looks like beautiful.
It looks special.
There's other cars that would look better with that treatment.
Preston Meyer says, last time I wrote in, I was asking about new V8s, but I scratched that and decided to buy a drag car, a Fox Body Roller with all NHRA safety stuff, but no motor and trans. What powertrain should I get? I want to run 10.0 in brackets.
Not knowing this person's drag racing history or experience, I would say get whatever powertrain gets you running soonest.
That's a good one.
There's no substitute for actual track time. You can spend an infinite amount of time in the garage making something work that will never work. Get running.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah, and if it's a Ford or Chevy V8 of some kind, you can get to 10 seconds.
Yeah, pretty easily.
Yes, yeah.
I would say the easiest, most reliable combo that you could run is like a junkyard LS setup with a basic supercharger and a 6-speed automatic gearbox with like maybe not even a trans brake.
Pretty straightforward.
And like a Ford 9-inch rear end. Done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like 410 gears. Done.
Yeah.
I mean, and that should just work, I think.
Yeah. I don't know this person's situation, but people have a tendency of over theorizing and over crafting these big elaborate plans that just keep them further and further from actually just doing the thing.
Yeah.
You know, shorten that distance.
You gave me very good advice when I was car shopping for 6 months straight, and you're like, hey man, you've been looking for 240s for like half a year and you haven't driven in half a year. I was like, shit, that's a great point.
Just get out there.
Yeah. That's good advice. I like that. Andrew says, if you could experience any car again for the first time, which would you choose? My first Ferrari was quite special. It was a 550 Barchetta, actually.
Yeah.
So it was a V12, you know, 5-speed gated, or might have been a 6-speed, but it was fucking pretty spectacular, and I wouldn't mind having the feeling of my first Ferrari again.
Yep. The two that I immediately went to were 300 SL Roadster, which we talked about, and LaFerrari.
LaFerrari.
Yeah.
Never had to go in one of those.
Yeah. Pretty special.
Yeah.
Very special. Yeah. I wish I could. I can still feel that moment. you know, cruising and just feeling like not even going fast, just driving at a moderate pace and just feeling really wrapped up in that emotion at that time.
Cool.
Pretty special, yeah.
Philip says, do you prefer long or short gears? I think you said short already, and mm-hmm. I prefer shorter as well.
Yeah, shorter and then one crazy overdrive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shorter with a fuel economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. oh, my God. Okay. Let's see. No bad something, blah, blah, blah. Says, should I get an old 135, a used M2, or a brand new M240? It's my only car, but I don't daily drive it, and my first rear-wheel drive car. I'm coming out of a Fiesta ST, and I want to do some autocross, but I need to road trip. Is reliability a concern with the N55? I would say used M2 non-competition is where I would go with CPO warranty.
I would bounce back between that and an M240. Because the reliability question, I don't know enough about. I'd defer you to the forums to see how big of an issue that actually is. But yeah, between those two is flip a coin.
If it's you don't just want a weekend, like if you want just a weekend car, I'd say build up a 135. But if you actually want to drive it a bunch, the M2 non-comp is quite nice.
Especially from distance too.
Quite nice. Yeah.
Probably has better steering than the M240i as well. Yeah. A little bit better feel because it's an M car. Like it's going to be a little bit more prepared for what you're doing.
Has he done, or I don't want to assume, have they done any, does he say there's any previous track time? Or driving or just occasional?
Doesn't. He had a
first rear-wheel drive car.
First rear-wheel drive car. So, yeah, I mean, either M2, M240.
Frankly. I would get in the M2. Yeah. I think M2, even it has better, it'll have better resale, it'll have better steering, it looks better. You're cooler when you drive one.
Wider track. Cool car.
And I prefer the engine in the non-comp. As you'll see when I, in my comp video, they changed the engine.
Yeah.
It's based on the M3 engine now.
Okay.
But it's actually, I think, in my opinion, been made worse, which you'll see in my video of the M2 comp. Second and last question. What are your thoughts on the official 2021 Formula One car design? Does it look too similar to the Indy car? What do you think? I haven't really seen it at all. Is that it? 2021 car? Is that a rendering? Is that actually it?
Wow, looks fucking this is cool. On F1, Formula1.com.
Damn, that looks awesome as hell. Is that really what it looks like? That looks rad. Punch in a bit. Can we make that bigger? Fuck, I like the 18-inch wheels.
I think if we do this.
Right? They're going away from the 13s. Is that really what it looks like? I fucking hope so.
.com. That looks awesome.
That looks amazing. Cool. Okay, so
it's much flowier than the what they have now. Just like it's just planes.
It's like shredder. Shredder.
It's this that drove through like an airplane supply shop.
This is very curvy.
I haven't watched Formula One in a long time. These cars look cool.
I haven't watched a race in a minute either. Cool I got to get car. Back to. Okay, what does the Indy car look like? I haven't seen what the Indy car looks like yet.
People's up the exact same image. That's so hard.
The 2020 Indy car. Oh, well, that's fucking sexy too, isn't it? Open wheel cars are looking good.
Guys, breaking news. Race cars still cool.
Race cars look good now.
Race cars are cool.
Oh, boy. Oh, geez. That is a lie. That image. That is not a...
That image done fucked.
That is not an 800 but it's by something.
That's a fucking good looking car, though. So that they've really... In the Indy car, they've really opened up that area around the front tires and made the front wing very simple.
Wow!
So is that a low
comparison? This isn't a great angle, but the behind the front tires of the F1 car, there are three vertical fins that seem to stick out a little bit.
Yeah,
it's more filled in. Whereas the Indy car, right behind the front wheels, is a completely empty space until basically the top part of the windshield and the body.
Looking
curving.
At the Indy car wing wrong.
The rear wing?
Yeah, the rear wingers are just not one.
It's a tiny.
It's very
little, and they look like there's no like vertical side planes on it at all. Is that correct? That's correct, though. That's what it looks like. Is that the... Oh, that's an actual one?
Right. What is happening?
I don't know. I think they both look pretty cool. They're both improvements over last year. I'm glad the nutsack is gone. Remember the nutsack nose?
You're going to have to clarify that.
On the Formula One cars, when they made the nose look like a dick and balls... Like 2 years ago.
Again, I haven't watched enough Formula One lately, but now I need to go back and look at it.
I think those look good, though. Just for Funner says, thoughts on the first-gen Porsche Cayenne Turbo? I found a company that makes a 5-inch lift kit for it. A mild off-road Cayenne Turbo would be fast and fun. Yo, Zach, go to my Instagram and scroll back a little bit for pictures of a lifted Cayenne turbo on braid wheels. So the problem
Joey
with
Sealy is doing a ton of this stuff.
Yeah. So the first gen Cayennes had the off-road hardware in them,
okay.
Right? So adjustable suspension and beefier like axles and stuff like that. And off-road Cayennes are very cool. Our friend Joey Sealy is doing some overlanding with the Cayenne diesels, which is pretty cool.
I would argue any SUV, I want to find an SUV that doesn't look good with beefier knobby wheels and tires and a roof rack.
I think they all do.
They all look better
yeah.
with that kit on it, right?
Because they're all communicating the image of like, I can take you places. Yeah. And if you're giving it better boots.
That's why it annoys me that manufacturers, I was talking to Andrew Collins on the R8 launch, and we were commenting that the R8 rides way better than the X4M he had last week. And it's funny how people have bought by these crossovers, you know, to get more height and more ride, and then the sporty versions have to be made so stiff to drive that now they ride worse than the supercars.
It's almost like there's a problem from this whole idea at the outset. Like, it's almost like a big, tall, heavy thing is not going to be a good performance vehicle down the line.
But at the same time, like, remember Ford, of course you remember, but Ford ditched the F-150 Lightning and pivoted to Raptor, leaning into that truckiness.
Yep.
I like that.
But yeah, I mean, they made a performance version of truck that wasn't a street rod.
Right.
You know, they did the thing that those trucks do, and they're still reaping the benefits. Although a modern F-150 Raptor, imagine that with a 5.2-liter supercharger V8 and 760 horsepower, would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, I think Hennessy does that, right? Doesn't he swap that in?
Probably.
The Raptor with the V8? Yep. Hennessy does it.
Oh, I just imagine a rear drive F-150 lowered and 760 horsepower.
Oh, okay.
That's like Vaughn Gittin's like Funhaver thing.
Yeah, I mean, I've been telling the company
Vaughn Gittin built a rally truck.
Yeah,
that's fucking cool.
I tell you, occasionally I catch myself looking at SRT10 Rams because they're so dumb.
No, I drove one. The problem isn't that they're dumb. The problem is they're not very good.
I guarantee they're not.
I drove
good.
It. I drove like dog shit.
I was trying to pitch that the company should buy one for a while.
Funny long-termer? That would be funny.
A manual Viper-engined truck.
As a thing to write about for long-term.
Like
for
$10,000 to $20,000, I want to say.
Yeah.
They're not,
a manual might be more.
Probably.
Yeah.
But
let's get these done and get the fuck out of here. Michael says, at what tenths of driving does a newer GTI with limited slip diff start to understeer? I don't want to get one, and if it's going to understeer at spirited 7 to 8 tenths back road driving. So the term is understeers at the limit. And so you get understeer when you find the limit, which is where the tenths system is defined as 10.
So at the 10th.
At the 10th.
At the 10th.
At the end of the 10th.
We should clarify, too, that like largely understeer in a performance car is a result of you driving it too fast into the corner.
Correct.
It is seldom the fault of the car when we're talking about sports cars.
One could argue it's never the fault of the car. The design of the car may be poor, but your operation could be changed.
Yeah. You can very highly exacerbate the understeer by just driving the car improperly.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
So in a GTI, you will... You break until after the apex, really, and then when... Yeah, anyway. A GTI has a lot of grip for a front-wheel drive car, and if you get the limited slip diff, if you're driving it properly, it really shouldn't understeer at all, is the answer.
If you are discovering understeer limits on a public road, GTI, stop.
Stop immediately.
Slow down.
Stop immediately.
Yeah.
If I or anyone in this room drives a GTI at 9/10 on a public road, there's no understeer. So just work from that point of view. Wiley says Ford F-150 Tremor. There's your fast rear-wheel drive truck.
Yep.
Yeah, I say yes, I don't want one, but I'm glad it exists. Sorry, last one really, then we're getting out of here. BRZ with performance package with plans to keep and supercharge for 90% week and track use once it's better, once it's paid off, or should I look for a lightly used Cayman S instead?
Cayman S?
Yeah. The answer is Cayman S.
Yeah. I mean, I thought he was going to go like Mustang or I thought they were going to go like Mustang or Camaro, but
yeah.
Cayman S is the alternative.
Yeah.
Cayman S all the way.
Yeah. I agree with the gentleman. Oh, is there one more? Fine. Casper says, would you rather have a first-gen manual R8 V10 or a Ferrari F12 as a weekend car? Manual V10. Manual R8.
F12.
There it is.
F12.
That's the show. Check out Silos Elgo on Edmund. Sure. Carlos is going to be on Edmund's Road Noise on the YouTubes. Go watch his GD500 review like I'm going to do later when I gets homes.
And when you're car shopping, go to edmunds.com, find the perfect car, and we'll tell you how much you should pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And then go to autotempest.com and search for the car you want later.
Yeah.
They're an advertiser.
Okay.
They're great. They've been with us for a very long time.
Are they here?
Are they in the room?
Like me?
They not in the room, sir.
Edmunds.com.
They is not in the room.
Well, they can learn how much they should spend at Edmunds.com and then being more informed, go shopping on autotempest.com.
Just you wait.
Scroll that down so people can see his headline. It's Carlos Lago on Twitter and Carlos Lago 6 on Instagram. He promises he'll do a better job posting on Instagram. Don't you, Carlos?
Did I say that?
Yes.
Okay.
You will.
I'll try.
Next week, do we have more shows this week? What do we have? Do we have another show to record this week or no? It's a slow week for us recording because we've stacked many shows.
You've had some good guests on
lately. We've had some winners.
We've had some bangers.
We were doing strong for a while. And
then you got me.
Yeah. Now we got fucking
stupid
nothing.
Joke.
Yeah. We're going to have some more. We have some more coming soon. But that is all for us tonight. Thank you for watching us live and donating through Super Chat and all those good things. Thanks for coming in, Silos.
Thanks for having
me. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Enjoy that Camry, motherfucker. The Smoke Guitar Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Good evening.